ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
All right, the cricket, five sleeps away. I know Richard's a big cricket fan, as are all of you out there, I'm sure. And how could you not be at this time of the year? And who better to take us through it than a man who's going to be part of our coverage all summer long here on ABC Sport. His name is Jason Gillespie, and he's back with us again. Diz, welcome.
No, thanks, Corby, and g'day, Benny. Hope you guys are well.
We are. Perfect timing. It's always good to chat to you, Diz, but particularly when this news comes out that Josh Hazlewood is going to miss the first test, and it feels like you put your finger in the wind that Brendan Doggett is firming to make his debut. Now, you were coaching him at South Australia when he obviously made the move and left Queensland. Yep. Who is Brendan Doggett? If someone says to you, who's this guy that's going to debut for Australia, what would you tell them?
What would I tell them about Brendan Doggett? Well, I'll tell you what we've got. We've got a fast bowler on our hands. He's one of the quicker bowlers in Australia. He bowls probably a slightly fuller length than a lot of seamers in Australian conditions, looking to swing the ball away from the right-handers and into the left-handers. He's got a good motor. He's a greyhound. He's as fit as a fiddle and can bowl long spells at good pace. And look, he's ready. He's performed well. He's taken a lot of wickets in the Shield this year. He's been on a couple of tours with Australia over the last little bit, a couple of the winter tours. So he's clearly on the radar. Obviously, South Australia's first Shield in 29 seasons. He took 11 wickets in that final against his old state, Queensland. So, look, he's ready to go. And I like the selection. I like the selection of him, guys, and I like the selection of Weatherald because they've been rewarded for performance in Shield cricket. And I know selection's tricky. When it comes to you want to reward performances at the lower level, but you also want to speculate and look for attributes that you think are going to be successful at that higher level. And I certainly think Brendan Doggett ticks both those boxes.
I know it's really hard to quantify it, Diz, but how much do we lose with the fact that Cummins isn't there, which we already knew, and now losing Josh Hazlewood?
Yeah, look, you're exactly right, Benny. It is hard to quantify. I mean, Cummins is a loss. There's no question of that. You lose your captain. You lose arguably your most effective seamer. But Scott Boland is a pretty decent replacement. Averages 12 in Australian conditions and has done really well. England will have some scars facing him. But yeah, losing Hazlewood as well as Cummins, England, yeah, they'll sniff an opportunity. There's no doubt about that because they know that they've got, Stark, Boland, probably Doggett, and potentially Cameron Green, who hasn't done a heap of bowling and is coming off a little niggle with his side and after a year out of cricket. So England will sense an opportunity, but I'm confident that the Australian seam attack is good enough to get the job done.
Corbin and Ben with Jason Gillespie on ABC Sport. Great chance for you to have a chat to Dizzy on Grandstand. So 1-300-558-222 is the talkback number. That's 1-300-558-222. So is that your team, Diz? If you were naming a side to start Friday in Perth, knowing everything that we know at this stage, Weatherald into open, Webster misses out, and Doggett plays as the replacement quick for Hazlewood.
Yeah, that would be mine, Corby. And look, desperately unlucky for someone like Bo Webster. But I think if Cameron Green's fit and firing and bowling 140 clicks an hour, obviously fine batter, has been batting at three for Australia in recent times. It's very difficult to leave him out. Bo Webster's done absolutely nothing wrong. He got a five in the last round of the Shield just to remind everyone that, hey, I'm still here. I'm still performing and doing a good job. And he scored some runs in the win against South Australia yesterday in the One Day Cup. So look, he's still there, but I just sense that a designated opener as opposed to playing Marnus at the top is the way to go. And with Jake Weatherald, the last 18 months he's performed really strongly. Last year in the Sheffield Shield on a tricky surface, half his games at Bellarive Oval, finishing the season with 901 runs at 50. For me, that's enough evidence to suggest that he can do the job and step up. So I'm opening him with Usman, Marnus at three, Steve Smith four, Travis Head five, Cameron Green, I'm putting him at six, and then Carey and the bowlers you mentioned are Stark, Doggett, Boland, and I'm playing a spinner in Perth. I think, guys, the only way Bo Webster, for me, gets into that side is if the Australian selectors and the Australian coach and captain decide that they don't need a frontline spinner and they leave Nathan Lyon out. Then I think they can add depth to their batting with Bo Webster and gives them another bowling option.
Well, that's interesting because Darren Lehman referenced that yesterday on this show. He texted Corbin and I last night and said that he thinks that changes now with the fact that Hazelwood won't be there and they'll definitely pick Lyon. But Corbin, you alluded to the fact you wonder, given there's going to be so many changes, whether that does count against Jake Weatherill. Maybe they want a little more stability, and the fact that even Doggett's going to be on debut, whether they do end up just saying, look, Marnus, you bat at the top, we'll keep Green and Webster.
I thought more if they went with Hazelwood, so knowing that he had the injury niggle in the Sheffield Shield game, and then with Green coming back underdone. But if Hazelwood, they now know he's out and they pick a fully fit bowler in Doggett, it's probably a more balanced lineup, isn't it? I agree with you, Diz. It's sort of brutal on Webster, but I think if Michael Clark spoke about this during the week too, if you imagine everybody plays to their absolute ceiling, do you want Webster or do you want Green? And really, if there's one spot in the team for the all-rounder, I can understand why they pick someone like Cam Green, who's already got a couple of test hundreds away from home.
Yeah, most certainly. I certainly agree with that. And just on the thoughts, Corby, about, you know, maybe lengthening the bowling if Hazelwood had a niggle, I wouldn't subscribe to that. I think you're fit to play. You're there to do your job. And, you know, I think you're guessing. I think the selectors would be guessing if they went down that path just to cover all bases through a niggle. If a player is under a cloud, then you don't play them. So I think you've just got to keep selection simple. I think there's obviously a lot of speculation around what the team's going to look like, and there's lots of theories and thoughts. And I think sometimes the selectors get a bit funky. I think let's just keep it simple. Let's pick a designated opener to partner Usman Khawaja. Pick the all-rounder you think is going to be most effective, and then pick your best three quicks and your spinner. Let's be honest, we got one of the best spinners that's ever played the game in Nathan Lyon. I think he can adapt to all conditions, and you know, I certainly would be loathe to go into a test match without Nathan Lyon.
He is a spinner as well who likes the bounce, so you would think that the bounce is going to suit him there. The old KISS principle, keep it simple, stupid. we'll go with that for the selectors. Diz, just third time in 4 years that Josh Hazelwood has got injured really early on in the summer. Do you have a theory as to why that is? Obviously, he's getting a little bit older. How concerned are you by that?
Yeah, look, it's a good question. And I've read and I've listened to a lot of discussion and debate about his lead-in and some question marks about why has he been playing all these one-day and T20 series as opposed to playing more long-form cricket. I mean, I think there are times you've got to trust the bowler and trust the coaching staff and selectors to map out what they believe is the best option. I certainly, in my personal opinion, I think playing with the red cricket ball and getting some overs under your belt back-to-back days, back-to-back sessions is not a bad thing. I think it gives you a chance to develop that robustness that you want for the rigours of five-day cricket. And four-day cricket's the closest thing to replicate to that. I don't care what anyone says, centre wicket net sessions or net sessions don't have the intensity of a match. And I've always subscribed to the theory that if players leading into test series and that are playing fixtures that are first-class status, that go on their stats, then they're just that extra little bit on the game because it goes against your numbers in your career. You know, as opposed to a net session, you can just ease off a little bit. Training run, you can ease off a little bit. Whereas in a first-class fixture, you're all guns blazing, aren't you?
I feel like in Test cricket, you get to this point and we spotlight all the individuals and everybody's story reads like a Hollywood script. I mean, they've had to overcome so much to get there. But I look at these two guys in particular that could both make their debut on Friday. And I touched on Brendan Doggett earlier. This guy's just a winner. Like, he's 31. He's won three Shield titles already, two with Queensland, one with South Australia. But in his early 20s, Diz. He was playing for Toowoomba South. So that's what cricket looked like for him. Hadn't played for a rep team or anything like that all through his junior days, and then basically picked out a grade cricket. His domestic debut started playing for a team called the CA 11, which was the Cricket Australia 11 that used to play in the old One Day Cup. They had a couple of years as a run there as the seventh team in the competition. That team, by the way, included the likes of Josh Inglis, who's obviously played all three formats for and captained his country. Matt Short, Xavier Bartlett, Jason Sanger all came through that CA 11 team back in the day. Probably makes you scratch your head.
Yeah, maybe there's a case to
bring that
back.
Maybe we should bring that back. He's also in line to become just the third First Nations player to represent his country in Test cricket. The other two being Scott Boland and yourself, Diz. So this is a significant moment for Australian cricket and for Brendan Doggett, who actually toured along with that Indigenous team that went to the UK in just before the pandemic. So that's a pretty cool thing too, that Australia could have a third First Nations player represent the country in Test cricket.
Yeah, most certainly, Corby. And it's it will be a significant moment. And because obviously Indigenous Australians have been underrepresented in our sport for a long time now. So to have another representative would be absolutely fantastic. And I'm certainly hoping that is the case. And what you've said about Brendan there, that his path to a potential baggy green is not a common one in the modern game. As you said, he didn't play any of the rep stuff. Was just plying away. It just shows the value of our local competitions. You work hard and you progress and develop and you'll get recognised. And yeah, it's a fantastic story. And hopefully it results in a baggy green come Friday.
And then there's Jake Weatherald, who was man of the match in that BBL final, of course, which you coached, and the Strikers had that memorable win, got the 100, and looked as if this guy is sort of up and to the right, and he's just going to keep going on the up and up and eventually play for Australia. And then really his career fell off a cliff, had to relocate, went to Tasmania, and he gave an amazing insight recently and praised his wife, Rachel, who basically helped him with his self-belief and spoke about the fact he had suicidal thoughts and had to really work hard at sort of repairing his own mental health before he went about repairing his game. And now he's in line to become the first born and raised player from the Northern Territory to represent Australia. I couldn't believe that stat, Dizzy, that we have never had someone born and raised in the NT. So Damian Martin was born in the Northern Territory, but relocated at a young age to WA. So we were lucky enough to do those Australian games in the NT recently, and it's a beautiful place to play cricket in our winter months down here in the south. So what a moment that would be for Jake Weatherall.
Oh, without a doubt. And, knowing Jake quite well and have coached him in all formats, he's ready to go. There's no doubt about it. He's got experience. He's played all around Australia and performed strongly. His record in Western Australia on the fast bouncy tracks is superb. I think there's a number of years ago he got twin hundreds in a Shield game against Western Australia, admittedly at the Wacker, but he likes the fast bouncy tracks because he's got a very good strong back foot game. He touched on his mental health, and fair play to Jake for being able to be so open and share his vulnerability. Exactly right. His wife Rachel has been absolutely superb and has really helped him along on his journey. Sometimes having coached Jake and some of the conversations that we've had sometimes in preparation for games, he sometimes, because he's so desperate to perform so well, he's almost overtrained. I remember a couple of occasions in the Big Bash, it'd be 38 degrees or whatever, and he would literally try and hit in the nets before the game. He would hit for over an hour and trying to hit the ball hard for over an hour, trying to clear the rope. And then by the time he got out of the middle, he was absolutely knackered. So he struggled, but he's learnt as the journey's gone on to really focus on what he needs to do to get himself ready to play games of cricket. And he's learning to really simplify the game and watch the ball and react to it, because Yeah, when he does that, he's as good as anyone going around.
Two great human interest stories as much as cricketing stories on the precipice of making their test debuts, Jake Weatherald and Brendan Doggett. And as always, if any of this conversation is troubling for you, Lifeline, always support available on 13 11 14.
Let's go back to the phones. Rod from Sydney wants to talk about the team for the first test. Rod.
Yeah, good afternoon, guys. Can't wait. Five days now. I'm really looking forward to it. First of all, in terms of who should be picked, you've got to release the dog, no doubt. He's ready as they say. And in terms of, it's obviously a big discussion about who else is going to get picked. But for mine, Marnus has been the form batsman all year. I think you'd be mad to put him in as opener. For mine, he should be number three. Having him as number three, Smith and then Head, 3, 4, 5, that's our strongest. Whenever we've gone good, that's our strongest part. And for mine, because we've got two fast bowlers not there, and Green, you can't say for sure that he's going to be fit for the whole game. Bo Webster's got to play and Jake Weatherall. So, and for mine, Cameron Green misses out.
Ooh. What do you reckon, Diz, of Rod's team?
I think Rod makes some good arguments. I think he's and thank you for that, Rod. I think what Rod's saying is that there's a question mark over whether Cameron Green can get through and be effective with the ball. Look, let's be honest. When the big three have played and Nathan Lyon, Cameron Green only averages 11 overs per test match. And I suspect going into this first test in Perth, he'll be required to bowl more overs than that, I would suspect. So I understand Rod's point, but look, I go back to a point I made a bit earlier, Corby. I think if Cameron Green's past fit, he's expected to do his job. He's expected to bowl maybe 30 overs in a test match. He should be ready and build himself up to be able to handle that amount of bowling. And to do that, you know, I like the idea of him batting in the middle order, batting down at six. Yes, it is tough on Webster. I take Rod's points, but with push comes to shove, I still, you know, touching on Michael Clarke's point, if, you know, all players are playing at their very ceiling, then I'm probably going Cameron Green.
A few texts just rolling through. G'day, Corby, Ben and Diz. Grant here in Hobart enjoying the show. Who's the team calling the first test? And can I have a broadcast time, please? Have a good call. Well, we've got all of those for you. Jason Gillespie, the voice you just heard, he'll be alongside Darren Lehman, Tom Moody and Phil Tufnell. He's an entertainer, Phil. And our commentators, Jim Maxwell for a 50-second summer, Corbin Middlemass, Sally Mitchell and Jonathan Agnew. 12:30 Australian Eastern Daylight Time. Next Friday is when the coverage begins. 12:50 the toss, 1:20 the first ball. So that's what you've got to look forward to. Jim Maxwell also earlier posed the question around who will be the four quicks in the frame when we play our next Ashes series up in the UK, the Northern Ashes. Mark in Sydney says, my bowling attack for the next Ashes, Jai Richardson, Fergus O'Neill, Lance Morris, and a reserve of the left-hand variety. Other than Spencer Johnson, who else is there? I think you mean specifically in the lefties, Diz. Who is there?
Yeah, there's not many left-handers. I'm a no for Spencer Johnson, and only because I think he's shown over the journey that his body's probably not quite up to it, and he's probably focusing more on the short forms of the game. He's injured again at the moment, so while he is a talent, he has only played a couple of three or four first-class games. So, I would say that would be a big gamble. So I'm probably a no. As for other left-armers, I mean, there's Ben Dorsius, who's playing in the short forms for Australia at the moment. But again, doesn't play a lot of longer-form cricket. So, that's something that... it'd be interesting to see. I suspect in the next couple of years there'll be a couple of bowlers that'll come out of nowhere and burst onto the scene. So we'll just have to wait and see.
So who would be your four, Diz, for the The next Ashes.
Geez, that's a tough one. I've got a little list here, Betty. Yep. I can't at the moment. I'm sort of struggling to limit it to four. I think the four will come out of this list. So if you bear with me, if going to the UK, I'm taking Fergus O'Neill in the squad because I think he could be really effective in UK conditions with the Duke Cricket Ball. He had some success last English summer with Nottinghamshire, and he's actually re-signed with Notts for the next couple of years. So he'll get a lot more experience in UK conditions. Even if England prepare the flattest of wickets, I still think he could have some effectiveness. Captain Pat, I think he'll be still running around. I've got a question mark over Hazelwood and Stark about whether they'll still be running around. I'll certainly be surprised if Boland and Michael Nisa are still around. So I'm saying Brendan Doggett will be in and around the place. I think the young Queensland quick, Callum Vidler, he'll be around. Nathan McAndrew's had a bit of experience in the UK playing for Warwickshire and Sussex in recent times. And I also really like Sam Elliott from Victoria, the big 6'8" bowling all-rounder. I think he's developing nicely, taking wickets for Victoria. And let's keep an eye on Marley Beardman. You know, I'd like to see him get a number of Shield games under his belt just to develop that little bit of robustness that we need in our bowlers, because that's my concern about our young bowlers coming through. They just don't have that robustness to get through back-to-back games, which is what you need to do in the increasingly shortened tours around the world these days. A lot of test matches in a short space of time. You've got to have that physical robustness to be able to get through those workloads. So I'd be challenging young bowlers if I was involved in in coaching to actually, can you bowl, can you back up day after day after day and build up your body to handle the workloads.
Jason Gillespie with us here on Grandstand, Corbin Middlemass, Ben Cameron, a mega Ashes preview.
Just got a little text direct from Xavier from Hobart. Of course, Xavier Doherty, three-format spinner. Text just reads, Liam Haskett will play Test cricket.
Wow.
Left arm quick from WA. So there's a name to
look
out for.
From Xavier.
Xavier didn't text it to me.
he plays a bit in South Australia too, doesn't he? He plays for the Strikers in the BBL, or has done
recent years. I think he's contracted as far as I'm aware, or he was at least a replacement player.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think he might be contracted. Yeah, he's a nice young bowler. It's a good point by Xavier. Yeah, he's a fine young bowler.
Yeah, we know who Xavier's favourite is on this show. Diz, by the end of the summer, your first summer travelling around with Corbin and I, we become so close because long days at the cricket, morning walks, runs for Corby, dinners, team dinners, all of that. By the end of the summer, we're finishing each other's sentences. So I thought we'd have a little game here where I say something and then you explain to me what needs to happen for that to take place. So I'll start off
with... Do you want to give us an example before we start?
I'm a little bit unsure what's going on here, boys.
So we'll be safe on the roads if Ben doesn't drive. So yeah. We'll be left hanging, and then you've got to try and complete
I'll try my best, boys. I'll give it a go.
Which is good because we normally walk to the ground, so I don't have to drive the team anywhere. or we get a taxi. Australia win this Ashes series if...
their top four absorb a good chunk of the fast bowling in the first 50 overs of each innings.
Ah, perfect. I like that. That's perfect.
That's exactly what we're after.
Take the shine off the ball, give Travis Head a chance to come in the 40th over, and look out. That'll be devastating.
England win this Ashes series if...
again, if they get through the early stages with the... new ball. I think it's a concern for them. I think that's why they're probably looking to play all fast bowling and bat as deep as they can. I think they're a bit concerned about their top three in Australian conditions, and that in turn that will expose Root, Brooke, and Stokes really early.
You know what I'm hearing here, Corbin Diz? First hour is important, boys. Massive. We love the important first hour of
every
day.
We love the important first hour, don't we?
We love it. Stuart Clark is ears are burning somewhere in Sydney if he's not listening. He loves it more than anyone. Joe Root will score a century this Ashes series if...
I don't think it's an if. I think it's a when. I certainly think Joe Root will score a test 100 or two on this tour. If he doesn't look to run the ball through the vacant cordon, try to run it past Gully, if he avoids that, I think he's a chance.
That little dab down to third man can get him into all sorts of trouble,
correct,
can't it? England win in Perth if...
Oh, you got me. If they put a big score on the board and put scoreboard pressure on for Australia, I think that's the only way they can win.
What about if Wood and Archer both play and play well?
Yeah, I'm not sure they're playing many games together. I mean, these guys have hardly bowled a ball in anger over the last couple of years. So I think I saw a stat the other day. Jofra Archer, over his 10-year first-class career, averages 4 first-class games per annum.
He does.
So, to expect him to play 5 test matches in 6-7 weeks is an absolute pipe dream for mine. And Mark Wood had a little niggle with his hamstring. I know England have come out and said he's cleared to be available for selection for this first test. I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be shocked if he isn't playing and he's kept for Brisbane.
It was a crisp little segment, wasn't it?
Oh, I think you've done well.
Thanks, boys.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
Diz has bailed you out, Ben, on that little seg, but I think it worked. Yep. I'm giving it a big tick.
I like the creative answer too. Not an if, a when.
Yeah, I liked it. There's one to chuck up for the quote headline.
Yep.
1-300-558-222 is the Summer Grandstand talkback number. That's 1-300-558-222. Corbin and Ben with Jason Gillespie in studio here on ABC Sport. Diz, I must admit, as a hardcore cricket fan, and we love the history of the game and the nostalgia and everything else, and when all of a sudden this test match started a couple of days ago, I thought, how good is it to have test cricket back at Eden Gardens? Mm. But boy, it's been a minute since we've had a test match in this part of the world. Look back into the history books. 2019 was the last test played there, not involving Australia, involving any country. So 2019 until now in 2025,
wow,
when India hosts South Africa.
That's an extraordinary stat, Corby.
It's insane, isn't it? That this is probably the most storied ground in Indian cricket, and yet hasn't hosted a test match for 7 years or something. And then from an Australian point of view, the last time that we played there was 2001, which, of course, was...
let's keep that quiet.
Yeah,
which was the VVS Laxman, the follow-on game, 281.
I saw it described as the theatre of VVS Laxman's dreams, and I thought that's probably a good place to try and describe that place. But you famously played in that game, Diz.
Yes.
What do you remember of it?
Oh, I've got a number of memories of it. I'll start. I was batting with Steve Waugh, funny enough. And look, I had a habit of signing lads' kit in their kit bags. Like, I'd sign their pads, their bats, their gloves. And this one time, early on in the tour, I signed every piece of kit in Glenn McGrath's bag, including his boots, like everything, right? I signed it, Jay Gillespie. No, and I thought I was the funniest bloke in the world. Glenn was a little bit grisly with me. So anyway, I'm batting with Tugger, and we were in a little spot of bother. And so we're batting, and I call for gloves. They come out, and I'm facing Harbhajan Singh, who's bowling well. So I'm trying to get through. It's a little tense little period of the game. I look down just as he's about to start his run-up, and it says, "Best wishes, Glenn McGrath," on both my gloves. So I pull away. I sort of walk down the wicket gardening, doing a bit of gardening. I've motioned for Tugger to come down the wicket. I've showed him, look what this clown's done. And all Tugger said, "Well, Diz, I reckon you deserve that." I go, "Yeah, that's fair." And so it was a lighthearted moment in a tense moment of the game. So it was quite funny. But that game, I mean, it's all about the question marks about the follow on. And there was a bit of discussion in the change rooms, but we just cracked on, got on with it. And Laxman was not out in the first innings, 40 or 50 not out, batting in the middle order. And then he came in at three in the second innings. Obviously, just on the bat, he'd been batting well and he'd got used to the pitch and stuff. So we got a wicket early and Laxman came out. And we didn't look like getting him out, boys. Like, seriously, yeah. He was unbelievable. And then Dravid came out at the full next wicket, one or two wickets down. And we were no match. They batted a whole day. And but my lasting memories of it were, like, Warnie was bowling into some serious footholds over and around the wicket. I remember him coming around the wicket to VVS Laxman, and Laxman's running at him, but Warnie's landing it in these footmarks, and the ball's kicking and bouncing out of it. He's still middling the ball. Like, it didn't matter if the ball was jagging up off the length or whatever. But he's doing it. Like, one ball will come down the wicket and he'll hit Warnie over mid-wicket for four.
Crazy.
And then the very next ball, exactly the same delivery, he just gets inside it a bit more and hits him over cover. And I'll never forget Warnie just hands on his hips standing there with a teapot. And then he just said, wow, and started clapping. He's just gone, that's one of the best shots I've ever seen in my life. And he just walked back to his mark. He knew we were watching something pretty darn special, that's for sure.
You and Steve Waugh in the first innings, if that's when that little glove interaction took place, put on a 133-run partnership for the ninth wicket there, Diz, and you made 46, which might have been your highest test score if it wasn't for the 201 not out.
Yeah, well, at the time, it certainly was. But another thing I do remember in that innings, I was on maybe 11 or 12, and Venkatesh Prasad was bowling, the big, tall Indian seamer. And I played at a ball, I nicked it, Nayan Mongia, the keeper, took it in front of first slip. And I did the old Dean Jones, like, scratching the ground, didn't look up. Umpire was shaking his head. Oh, the Indians were in disbelief. And, I think Tugger came down the wicket and said, that's some of the best acting I've ever seen. It is well played.
When did you realise, after enforcing the follow-on, sorry, Corb, that you were in real strife?
Oh, probably after a couple of shots of VVS. You bowl your best ball, top of off stump, and he just smacks you through covers for four. You go, oh, gee whiz, we might be a bit of strife here. Certainly sometime during that day when both Laxman and Dravid are north of 100, we're probably thinking we're in a bit of strife here because there was just no way. And I think what probably summed it up was when Matthew Hayden came on to bowl. That was probably the time when you were in a bit of strife, big Haydos steaming in. The size of him, he should have actually been able to bowl quick, shouldn't he?
Nine bowlers used. The only two that didn't bowl was the keeper, Gilly, and Steve Waugh. Everybody else had a bowl. So 12 overs for Ricky Ponting, 6 overs for Matthew Hayden, 2 overs for Michael Slater, and 1 over for Justin Langer. He even had a bowl at one stage. Yeah,
Alfie's comfortably the worst bowler that I've ever seen.
What did he bowl?
Offies, weren't they?
He bowled little seamers, and they were like, he's from obviously a short man, but they were so slow, like, a spinner's arm ball was a yard quicker. I mean, it was, they were pretty pathetic, to be fair. We were in a spot of bother when Alfie was rolling the arm over, that's for sure.
I think Steve Waugh was too smart, too. He thought, look, VVS and Rahul Dravid are batting pretty well here.
Benny, we were better off having Gilly take the gloves off and bowl with his pads on than Alfie bowl.
There was my memory of watching cricket growing up in domestic cricket that all the tremendous batsmen all bowled these little medium paces. So obviously, you had Ponting, Michael Hussey bowled obviously
Martin bowled decent medium paces. Yeah,
they all seemed to roll out some little mediums back in the day, but less and less nowadays. And last thing on this game, Diz, perhaps one thing that gets forgotten a little bit in history. When you got Sachin out in the second innings, so you've enforced the follow-on, you remove Sachin Tendulkar, Australia are still 159 ahead. So you need 7 more wickets, 159 in front, and then we had the Laxman and Dravid partnership. So it goes to show how improbable this was and what an amazing partnership it was in the history of the game.
Oh, spot on. Cool. We thought, okay, no dramas. This will be a cakewalk. We'll win by an innings in 50 or something, we'll get another couple of wickets. But they just weren't forthcoming. And look, we actually bowled really well. Like, there's no doubt about it. You know, us quick bowlers, we bowled well. Warney bowled really well. It was just rinse and repeat. We'd just get rotated around and we bowled okay. There was no question. They just batted. They were just far too good. And, you know, we could come up with any excuse we want. Those excuses would be lies, because you just sometimes have to put your hand up as a bowler and say we were bettered by the batters on that occasion.
Diz, I'm just thinking out loud here. Corbin would really like it if he signed all of his things throughout the summer of cricket. Like, just anything of his you can find, just sign it.
After I was talking about it, Benny, I was thinking that could be...
Might bring that back.
I might bring that back to the ABC comms box. So, yeah, just watch your kit, boys. Watch your kit.
Sign anything of Jim's. Jim will take it well. I like this question from Gunter. Everyone can participate on this. He's in Brisbane. He says, can Jason please tell me how fast a bowler must bowl to be fast rather than just fast medium?
That's a great question, because there's a lot of discussion. Because I've had this discussion with Merv Hughes, actually, boys. Because you know how, like, I think as a kid, I was growing up, I'd watch the, you know, any time a bowler would come on to bowl, you sort of rank them how fast they are by what the description is. So a medium pace is between 120 and 125 or whatever. Then medium fast is probably a bit quicker than that. Then fast medium is quicker than that again. And then fast is the fastest. But Merv Hughes, he looked at it the other way between medium fast and fast medium. He sees it, Big Merv, as medium fast is faster than fast medium.
Nah.
And I disagree with him, because I think fast medium's faster than medium fast. Yeah. But he's saying, it's a medium fast ball. The other way, he goes, that's a fast medium pacer. Yeah,
Merv,
I know, it's nonsense from Big Merv.
Merv
is kidding himself, I agree. But I always assumed maybe it went in ascending order, go medium, then medium fast, then fast medium, then fast.
Yeah, yep. I'd agree with that.
I think that's the correct order.
And I think I would sort of have mediums 120 to 130. Then I think sort of medium fast is sort of 130 to 140, sort of Glenn McGrath, you think that's sort of 137 kilometres per hour.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'd go from there to 145 is fast medium. And then up above that, you're fast.
145 plus, you're fast.
You're fast.
Yeah, I'm probably going 125 to 130. I'm going fast medium from 135. And then, 145 is genuinely fast. 90 mile an hour, that is damn quick. Yeah, really, really quick.
We solved the big issues today.
I didn't expect us to be doing that.
Do you know what's incredible, though? Like, those are the things that people talk about at the pubs and at cricket clubs, and I think anyway.
So people will be rolling back to their cricket clubs saying, I heard Jason Gillespie say these are the categories and this is
what Can you believe what Merv Hughes thinks?
Yes, can you believe he's got,
yeah,
got it all wrong?
Yeah.
Just on Travis Head's form, so a little bit, we'll just steer back into some nuts and bolts cricket of the here and now.
I've actually become very close friends with Merv recently, because we both worked a lunch break, and then the two of us, who are both very good on the tooth, always go to lunch after everyone else has finished lunch, and we clean up whatever's left is, Merv and I. The two of us, we just sweep up whatever food remains.
Travis Head's form, he's got one score over 40 in his last 20 hits. Now, that does include white ball games, that's across formats. What's the level of concern, Diz, about your fellow South Australian leading into the first test?
Yeah, look, I'm not concerned with Trav. Trav's a big time player. He's building himself up. He'll be ready to go. I know he's excited for this series. Look, in an absolute ideal world, a couple more scores would be nice, just to I suppose tick that box. But look, he'll be ready to go. Look, he's a very experienced player. He knows what he needs to do to prepare. He dots the I's, crosses the T's in order to get himself ready. And I'm excited for Travis Head. I've said he's could be Australia's highest run scorer for this series. I'm that confident in his ability and in how he goes about it, his prep. I'm sure he'll be fine.
There's a text here, Diz, as well, while we're reminiscing about your career, from David in Launceston. What people forget about Jason Gillespie's 201 not out is that Australia nearly lost the first test of that series. Australia chased 307 and got them seven down. So the opposition wasn't that bad. Is that right?
Yeah, and I might have hit the winning runs as well. So in that first game. So I appreciate the text, Dave, from Launceston. Thank you very much. But yeah, look, we were under a little bit of the pump there against the Bangladeshis in Dhaka. It was a tight fought game. And then we went to Chittagong, and then I just dished out some discipline with the bat, and we dominated.
Yeah, good.
It's great to have former Australian all-rounder Jason Gillespie with us here on Grandstand.
He'll be there come the first test, which starts on Friday in Perth. Coverage from 12:30 Australian Eastern Daylight Time, and the first ball will be sent down just after 1 o'clock, so you'll hear it all here all summer long on ABC Sport.
Are we going to do the comparisons?
Yeah, let's
so
do it.
This is your brainchild, Corbin. You can run it.
Well, I was trying to tell you into it, but I'll take charge, Diz. What we're looking at here... the comparisons between Australia and England. I did this with Boof yesterday, and you need to select which one you'd rather take. So basically, openers, number threes, number four, so on and so forth. So let's say Weatherald gets the start. So are you taking Weatherald and Khawaja, or are you taking Duckett and Crawley? Whose opening pair would you rather?
Oh, I think I'd go... the English, only because they're settled. They've played a lot of test matches together. I think they've played something close to 40 tests together as an opening combination. You know, the Australian opening combination, we're going to have a debutant and a guy that, you know, in Khawaja, that I think there is some question marks about him. You know, he'll turn 39 in... during the Adelaide test, and I don't want this to be an age thing, but I think, you know, it's common knowledge that everyone knows that Usman's probably more effective player against spin, and there's probably no better example than his double 100 in Sri Lanka earlier this year. It was a wonderful knock, but there have been some question marks about him against genuine pace bowling. So I think that's a little side story that's going to just keep bubbling away throughout this summer, especially if he misses out a couple of times early in the piece.
Yeah, and you would have found with your batting prowess that your eyes just go as you get up towards 39 days, and you don't see them quite as well, particularly when they're quick. The number threes, so Ollie Pope and Marnus Labuschagne.
Marnus Labuschagne.
Yeah.
Look, Ollie Pope, I know he scored some runs the other day and he'll probably start, but, you know, they have batted Jacob Bethel at three in some recent test matches, England, so it'll be interesting to see which way they go. But I know Marnus has been out of the side for a little bit, but he's a class act and he's on the back of some really strong form for Queensland, so I'm taking Marnus.
This is a good one. Smith or Root?
Ooh.
Jeez, I'll tell you, this is the toughest one. Can I have both? Like,
no,
seriously.
No.
I mean, two of the best players that have ever played the game. You're asking me to pick one. You're asking me to pick one, either the Aussie or the Englishman who I coached at Yorkshire for many years.
Yes.
And look, I'm very close to. Look, as an Aussie, I'm going to have to say Smudge. So,
Rudy.
No question.
Cool. And just a little side section here. Does Joe Root get his breakthrough 100 in Australia this series?
Look, I think he does. I think he's too good a player to not do that. I think it's a good opportunity for him. I think he's batting as well as he's batted ever batted in Test cricket. So I think he's odds on to get a Test 100 this year.
Will you give him the advice to put away that little dab or smuggle down towards third that he plays?
No, look, I'm sure he's having conversations with his batting coach and his teammates and stuff, and they're talking about how they adjust and adapt their games to the bouncier tracks in Australia. So, and you learn your lessons from previous tours, don't you? So I'm sure Joe's learnt that lesson. We'll soon see in Perth, won't we? So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Head or Brook?
Head.
Yep.
I know Brook is a quality player, and his record in time will go down as one of the best in the world. It's interesting, in the history of test matches for England, Harry Brook has got the highest strike rate of all players.
Wow.
You think every player that's ever played test cricket for England, minimum 1,000 balls faced, he strikes at 87.52, which is quite extraordinary. And the second guy on the list, striking at 86.14, is Ben Duckett.
Duckett, yeah.
So the top two... Two of their top five you know, five of the top eight strike rates in the history of the game in Test cricket for England are currently in the England side, including Jamie Smith, Zach Crawley, Ollie Pope's even right up there. So, look, it just lends itself to the theory that they are scoring a lot quicker these days, and this Baz ball, or whatever you want to call it, you know, is real.
Just answers only here, Diz, before the news. Carey or Smith?
Carey.
Carey. And then the bowlers. So are you taking the combination of Stark, Boland, Doggett, Lyon, or the combination of Archer, Wood, Garth Atkinson? So I'll put you down for the Aussie quartet there. So
did we do the keepers, Carey Smith?
Yep, we got Carey.
Did we do the all-rounder at six?
Sorry, no, Stokes and Green. I knew we missed one. Yeah.
I think you have to go Ben Stokes in that one. With all due respect, I love Green, don't get me wrong, but yeah, Ben Stokes, 100 Test matches plus, England captain.
So yep, the English pair up top, Duckett and Crawley, and Ben Stokes, the only of the Englishmen that Diz has put on top. Great hit out, Dizzy. Can't wait to see you in Perth. Safe travels out west. I'll catch up with you on Friday.
Look forward to it, boys.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.